This is the Thrive Content Clubcast.
Hi everyone, and welcome to this episode of Content Clubcast. This time we're talking all things net zero. So we'll start with the basics of what exactly net zero means and how we can achieve it, both in organisations and as individual people. How can we contribute to this climate change target? So to guide us through this topic, we've got just the right person. Andrew Middleton is the Managing Director of the British Gas Net Zero team. So hi, Andrew. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Brill. I think we're just going to get started with, I was going to say a simple question, but it's probably not a simple question to explain. What does net zero mean? What does that term mean?
Yeah, essentially, net zero is about making sure that the amount of greenhouse gases, so things like carbon dioxide, that either a company or a country or even an individual adds to the atmosphere is no longer more than what they take out. So it's all about, you know, making sure that that impact of that consumption particularly is in balance. And the UK government has committed to achieving net zero by 2050, which means that in practice, in the years leading up to 2050, individuals and companies across every part of the economy will need to take steps to get as close to zero emissions as possible. And that would be really all about adopting new clean technologies like renewable energy and those sorts of things in the years ahead of 2050. The Paris Climate Agreement, which was signed in 2015, was, you know, a real catalyst, I guess, in terms of getting countries to commit to net zero. And the goal of the Paris Agreement was to stop the world's average temperature rising more than 2 degrees, or ideally 1.5 degrees, which is the extent to which international climate scientists identified that the whole world needs to reach net zero emissions by 2050 in order to avoid reaching 1.5 degrees of global warming.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. I suppose the next thing I wanted to ask really was, we hear a lot of other terms sort of bandied about in the same kind of context as net zero, things like carbon positive and carbon neutral. Can you just explain, are they different? Are they similar?
Yeah, so I agree. There are lots of terms when we're talking about this subject. And actually, I think that can be challenging for people. So for people that aren't experts, it actually it can feel quite overwhelming. And you know, I've only been working in the industry 2 years myself, and so prior to that, you know, I certainly had no idea what the different terms mean. You know, carbon neutral is about making sure that there's a balance in terms of the amount of carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere with that which is being absorbed or removed from the atmosphere, and that can include things like offsetting, so you know, things like planting trees. Being carbon positive means going beyond net zero and making additional positive contributions to the environment. The thing we talk about a lot at British Gas is about decarbonisation. So that is looking to identify things that are currently carbon intensive and reducing the carbon intensity of those things. So be that, you know, heating your home, for example, which is, you know, typically gas boilers in the UK, which is carbon intensive. And actually what we're looking to do is decarbonize the heating in the home, which means moving to different types of technology, things like heat pumps, which use less carbon.
What about organizations themselves? Because I know you talked a bit about what British Gas are doing. For organizations that maybe rely on a lot of traditional fuel sources and aren't really sort of seeing the gains in getting involved in renewables at the moment, why should they care about this? Why should they get on board?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of sort of factors that will increasingly compel organizations to take their responsibilities seriously. So you know, nowadays everyone's got to report on their sort of, you know, ESG credentials, as well as the sort of financial metrics that they're used to reporting. If you've got shareholders, you'll see lots of investors, institutional investors, you know, won't make investments in companies that aren't taking this responsibility seriously. So fundamentally, you know, organizations will find it harder to do business, and they'll find it harder to secure investment and retain shareholders if they're not kind of taking this seriously. I think you'll see increasing amounts of government policy that both incentivizes the right behavior as well as disincentivizes the wrong behaviors. I think, you know, again, like tax will play an important part of that, but policy more broadly, I think we'll see businesses have to change their behavior. And ultimately, I think that this, any sort of seismic change like we're, you know, embarking upon, ultimately succeeds where the incentives are aligned. And so, you know, we will see the cost of renewable energy, you know, fall. We'll see this sort of amount of innovation. Like, we're already seeing huge amounts of innovation and sort of entrepreneurship in green technology, because entrepreneurs recognize the huge commercial opportunity that this sort of transition will open up. And so, you know, as ever, like, if you're not prepared to kind of help shape the future of the market, you're trying to hold on to the status quo, then you're sort of primed for disruption. So that's certainly how we think about it. We recognize that this is the direction of travel, and if, you know, we're not leading that transition, then others will come in and disrupt the market and do it for us. So I'd certainly much rather be in the driving seat than being, I guess, in the passenger seat on this one.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really important message, I think, for all businesses to get on board. Could you maybe go into that in a little bit more detail, like maybe using a couple of examples from what British Gas are doing, just to kind of give people an idea of, okay, if they're a company, they want to help meet this target, what do they need to start doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it really boils down to two big areas, I guess, companies can think about. One is how the company is being run itself. So things like the buildings it's using, the amount of transport that employees might be undertaking to fulfill their jobs. And there's sort of those direct emissions that an organization might be responsible for, I guess. And so, you know, within that bucket, you can again think about what are the steps that we can take to move from carbon intensive technologies to renewable technologies. So if we're talking about, you know, the amount of commuting that your employees need to do, or work-related travel, can you make greener choices? So things like electric vehicles. So a big part of what we're doing at British Gas at the moment is electrifying our fleet. So we've got 7,000 engineers out on the roads every day, and actually we're undergoing a program of electrifying the vans that those engineers are using. So that's the sort of thing that you can do in terms of your direct emissions from your sort of day-to-day work. And the second thing, which I think is really important, again, for an organization like British Gas, is particularly important, is thinking about your products and services and the impact those have on your customers' kind of carbon footprint. So for us, as I say, the sort of bread and butter is heating our customers' homes. And so a big part of my role and British Gas Zero's role is about looking at helping customers decarbonize their homes. So, for the right customers and the right properties, moving them from a gas boiler to a heat pump, looking at solar panels so that customers can generate their own electricity, installing electric vehicle chargers, those sorts of things. So I guess I'd encourage listeners to be thinking about two things. One is the direct emissions from operations of the company they work for, and then secondly, the products and services that they're offering their customers, and the extent to which they can decarbonize those for their customers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to go back to the heat pumps that you mentioned. For people who don't know, why is that a greener solution for energy?
Yeah, so heat pumps are basically powered primarily by, you know, the air that's outside customers' homes, and then the electricity that's provided into the home. And increasingly, we can make that electricity renewable, driving it from renewable sources. Heat pumps are also sort of 3 to 5 times more efficient than a gas boiler. So that means the amount of energy you need to put into running a gas boiler is 3 to 5 times more than it would be for a heat pump, in terms of sort of what you get back from the device. So both from a source perspective and from an efficiency perspective, you're getting benefits by transitioning to a heat pump. We're very focused on air source heat pumps. There are also ground source heat pumps, which are even more renewable. So they're powered by, or they're kind of more efficient, and they get their heat source from the energy that's in the ground, which is another great way for us to look at decarbonizing how we heat and power homes.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's really useful to know, actually. So, Angie, can I ask you, it's a difficult one, really, because in practical terms, people sort of in everyday life might not connect with this issue. They might hear the term net zero and not sort of think it really applies to them. So why should individual people care about this, and what can they actually do to contribute towards this goal?
Look, I think it's a really good question, and it will be, you know, it will vary for individuals. I think working in the energy industry like I do, we can take it for granted that actually, you know, obviously this matters and obviously we should do something about it. But actually, I think it is really important to recognize that not everyone connects with this on a daily basis. You do see this in the news a lot. So one of the things which really struck me a couple of months ago was the news about the reservoir in Catalonia in Spain, which had dropped to having just 8% of its capacity because it hadn't been raining in Barcelona for I think a couple of years. An 8% reservoir is absolutely mind-blowing. Like our reservoirs, you know, our county councils often will impose a water, like a hose pipe ban, when our reservoirs drop below kind of 70-80%. So for that to have dropped to 8%, to bring that to life, like, you know, that's people's drinking water, right? In a country that's not particularly far from home for us. And so, you know, when that was on the news, my wife and I were chatting about it, and she turned around and she asked me, do you think we're going to die from climate change? I was like, well, like, it's, I don't think we will, my generation, but we've got two little boys, and, you know, if we don't do something about climate change, then frankly, I don't know what will happen in their lifetime. There was a stat recently that I saw, there are expected to be 1.2 billion climate refugees displaced by 2050. So they're going to have to move out of their homes because of the impact of climate change. So the effects of climate change are really significant, and we don't necessarily see them every day. But if you sort of take a longer view, you know, looking back 10, 20, 30 years at what's happened to the planet, what's happened to our weather systems, what's happened to different parts of the world over that time horizon, then it can become quite scary. But the challenge is not to kind of go, you know, it's an apocalypse, let's all panic. Because what we do want to do is try and compel people to take some action, and no action's too small to make it worthwhile. Again, I think kids can be really helpful here, because lots of kids are quite sort of animated by, you know, what's happening, and kind of motivated to do something, be that just picking litter from the lane outside your house, or, you know, making sure that we're turning lights off. We go around the house and all the lights are off because my six-year-old's turning them off the whole time. So there's lots of sort of little things that people can do, as well as then think about some slightly bigger investments.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful when you were talking about the impact that it will have, possibly not on our generation, but future generations, and recognising that on a very human level, we are all involved in this, and we do all need to step up and take responsibility for this. I'm just conscious, Andrew, while we've been talking, that we're still in the middle of a cost of living squeeze in the UK, and people might not have that much spare cash. Is there any way to make eco-friendly changes more affordably?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really important question, and it's absolutely critical that that we do ensure that this transition is affordable and is equitable, you know, across society, actually. And it's not, this isn't the preserve of the wealthy. What I would start by saying is that the cheapest and greenest energy is that energy that's not used. So anything we can do to reduce consumption at source, you know, is going to help customers in their pocket, but it's also going to help the planet. So that's where things like insulating your home, and that can be through small things like draft excluders and making sure your windows are sealed and those sorts of things, will mean that you're losing less heat when you're heating your home, which means that you need to use less at source. So those sorts of steps, I think, are really important. And then when it comes to the more significant investments, so be that things like solar panels to help generate your own electricity, be it more kind of major insulation, like wall insulation or loft insulation, or things like heat pumps that we talked about before, you know, that's where we do have to think about how do we support customers with the upfront cost in order to benefit from the reduced kind of ongoing costs. And so there are a number of government grants available, which are definitely worth looking at and finding out more about. So we've got the boiler upgrade scheme, which is about providing upfront grants for customers that are switching to a heat pump, for example. There's the energy company obligation eco scheme, which helps fuel poor customers make energy efficiency measures more affordable, particularly things like insulation. There's the Great British Insulation Scheme, which is live this summer, which is again about helping customers with the cost of insulation. You know, we're definitely thinking and working in partnership again with people like banks on how we might innovate to kind of create different financial models, which reduces the upfront burden of the customer, but then maybe shares some of the benefit. So in Europe, for example, places like Germany, there's what's known as heat as a service, where, you know, essentially, you know, the heating technology, be it a heat pump or a boiler, or whatever, may not be owned by the customer. It might be owned by the heating provider. And, you know, customers are just paying a monthly rate to achieve the heat that they require. And so, you know, you might see more innovation in those sorts of areas as we move forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think I just want to go back to that point that you made about the cheapest and the greenest energy is that which you don't use. If there's one takeaway that people take away from this podcast, that would be it for me. You know, that's the bottom line, isn't it, really? If you can, where possible, save energy is one of the most important things.
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel like I'm in a really privileged position leading a business within the UK's largest energy company, trying to help people use less energy. So, you know, as I say, we do take this really seriously, and we recognize that you know, the current model, the current market needs to change and needs to transition. And so we're very keen to support customers with that and support the UK with that.
I just wanted to ask you, and I don't know if this is something that British Gas are involved in, but what's the link between net zero and the Science Based Target Initiative? Are you able to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, the Science Based Target Initiative provides validation. So its purpose is to try and help scale up the number of businesses that are adopting science based targets. So again, to the previous question, you know, why should people do this? Well, this provides a sort of validation of what they're doing, allows businesses to demonstrate that their targets are in line with the Paris Agreement and in line with the latest kind of climate science. So, you know, there's an endorsement that an organization is doing the right thing. I think there's over 1,000 organizations already signed up to that. And I think some of these sorts of global coalitions of organizations moving in the same direction, I think adds much more weight and gives probably the general public more confidence about what's happening. I think it's dangerous when you've got different people kind of going off in different directions, and sort of if we don't take the public with us, as I've said previously, then I think we're just making this challenge more difficult. So where we can align and where we can collaborate in this sort of way, I think that's really powerful. You know, I think of so our mission at British Gas Zero is to help increase the numbers of customers, save increasing amounts of carbon and cost. And that sort of mission is a team sport, right? So, you know, we've got a role to play, but equally we work with a range of different partners all collaborating on the same mission. And I think we're going to have much more success where we can come together and move as one with that common ambition in mind.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to end on. And yeah, just thank you so much for your time, Andrew. It's been really, really informative and great to have you here.
Great. Well, thank you for having me, Laura, and speak to you soon.
You've been listening to the Thrive Content Podcast. Visit www.thrivelearning.com for more information. Be bold. Be brave. Thrive.